Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Stacey LeBaron, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Yes, Stacey LeBaron introducing the tennis podcast here on semi-finals day at the ATP Finals. Thank you to Stacey for backing us in our Kickstarter last year so that we could do our 120-plus tennis podcasts this year. We're going to hit 130 if we possibly can.
Thanks, Stacey.
Yeah, well, that's Catherine. Hello, Catherine. We've got all the dailies from the Davis Cup Finals coming up. And yeah, Stacey and all the many others that have introduced the show have been responsible for us being able to fly Matt to Australia and give him a job, and he's in Madrid right now. It's all happening, so thank you very much. And we will be running our Kickstarter from December the 2nd on Monday, December the 2nd. And if you'd like to introduce a show next year, you'll be able to. So anyway, details to come on that. Right, tennis, O2 Arena, ATP Finals. We've just had Dominic Thiem beating Alexander Zverev in pretty straightforward, not exactly dramatic and not exactly exhilarating fashion. Is that fair to say, Catherine?
No, we've just had by far the lesser of the two single semi-finals.
Yeah.
I mean, should we deal with it first so that people stay tuned for?
Yeah, let's do that.
Analysis of the better semi-final. Yeah,
the good one to come, folks. why was it underwhelming? That's one of the questions I have, because building up to it, I find it hard to get underwhelmed by Dominic Thiem generally at the moment, because he's such an exciting player to watch, particularly given that he seems to have just changed his outlook on life over the last year or so.
Yeah, he has. And I was trying to analyse this as well, because I am so excited by Dominic Thiem. And if you ask me to pick out on paper going into today, who of the eight players from the draw have you been most excited by, I probably would have said Dominic Thiem, but he is somebody that still relies on matchups, both in terms of his playing style and his personality. You know, he's not an exuberant personality on the court. He lets his tennis do the talking, and he can set a match on fire. We've seen that twice this week already, and how. But he needs some help, I think. He can't carry a whole thing on his own. And he was on the court tonight with somebody who was draining the vibes from the stadium, frankly. It was a depressing watch, Alexander Zverev, tonight. And I'm sure a depressing experience for him. And it's not that I have no sympathy for him, but he needs to handle his shit better on the court, because that was depressing and demoralising to watch. And he's not a kid anymore. You can't toss your racket off the court across the court and sit there like a petulant child waiting for an actual child to collect that racket, deliver it to you, and for you to then just point at your racket bag dismissively for the child to put it down there as she's trying to hand it to you. I thought that was a pretty unpleasant sight, really. And I understand heat of the moment, etc. I'm sure he's a nicer person than that in real life, but it's not good enough.
And he's not getting very far, is he?
No, it's not getting him anywhere.
And if you think back,
sending him backwards.
A couple of months ago, the all-time greats, what they said to him as they charged off court at one set all with Milos Raonic, not one negative face. I want to see fist pumps and come-ons every point, because they know what it takes, and he hasn't figured that out. Now, it may be that he is in a really bad way. I don't know. He may mentally just be really struggling with everything and not be able to do that, in which case he needs to get some help sharpish, or maybe it just won't happen for him. But this is not working right now. The petulance, the losing the plot, frankly, and beating himself. What happens is, and Laura Robson, I was commentating with tonight, who's a pretty astute observer, and she doesn't pull punches either. She said, you know, he's quite mentally tough when he's in the match, when he's ahead. He will hang in. The moment he goes behind and gets a break of serve behind, he's the total opposite of that.
Yeah, he is now 1-12 against top five players this year after losing the first set, the one that he won. Not this year overall. And the one that he won after losing the first set was against Wawrinka in Miami 2017. So he hasn't come back from a set behind against a top five player since for 2.5 years ago. And it's poor, and I do want to make allowances for him having a tough time, but I do. There is a line, I think, in between some elements of his behaviour and others, and it's the bits that reek of entitlement that bother me.
Yeah.
It's the entitlement that bothers me, and maybe he doesn't realise that that's how it's coming across. There was a quote from, I can't quite remember exactly what it was about, quote from his press conference after the Medvedev match yesterday, and I can't remember what the question was, but he felt he had been misinterpreted a bit, and he said, oh no, you're taking what I said a bit out of context there, you're going to make me sound like I'm coming off as arrogant, which I know some people think, and it was quite revealing actually that he obviously is a bit conscious of how he's coming across, and I'm sure he doesn't intend to, but equally, you are the sum of your actions, aren't you? You are the sum of your behaviours.
I don't really
know
what
is. And, you know, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. And I'm okay with him being frustrated with how he's playing. Double faulting on set point is shit, isn't it? But it just the way he sat there waiting for that child to scamper across the court and hand him his racket, and him not even looking her in the eye and saying thank you and taking it from her, just pointing at his racket bag, made me wince. That was my reaction. I winced when I saw that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think he is a better bloke than we get to see a lot of the time. Judging the way Dominic Thiem behaves towards him, there's such warmth between them.
I found loads of good things about Alexander Zverev. Everyone talks about how what a grounded, warm families from, and yeah, he's got the right friends and the right people around him by all accounts. Jez Green's a great bloke, isn't he, and he's really stuck with him.
His brother's lovely.
Yeah, and I don't think Jez Green would stick around if
no.
he didn't think there was a good deal of integrity there and so on, but that doesn't forgive.
No, but and let's not forget Jez has been in the box when Andy Murray's been kicking off, somebody we think an awful lot of, but whose behaviour at times on court has been appalling really towards his support team, and Andy was the first to admit that. The difference is Andy Murray often plays better when he's behaving like that. You know, he still produces. Zverev, it feels like it starts to happen when things are going wrong, and they continue to go wrong. It's not helping him, all this. He's got to find a better way. And I just feel like, you know, if Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer are shouting in your ear hole that this is the way to behave, to keep that in and to be positive, then maybe you really should be listening and finding a way to do it. And maybe that's oversimplifying it. Maybe he can't. Maybe he never will. But if he doesn't, I'm not sure he will ever conquer this. So good vibes needed for Alexander Zverev in the future. Good vibes everywhere for Dominic Thiem right now. And I'm not sure who I'm more excited about in terms of their development out of him and Tsitsipas. It's a really close run thing, because I did not expect to feel like this about Thiem this few months. I thought where we were with Thiem was where we were going to be, and that eventually we'd get a French Open. Didn't think that we would get this. Didn't think until Vienna.
You thought the Laver Cup intro would turn out to be accurate.
What was it? Baseline
clay court grinder, Dominic Thiem.
Yeah. When I mean, look, there have been obviously the moments in that U.S. Open match against Nadal where you just think this is just so electrifying. But I've always thought that was reactive tennis. That was always him. Backs against the wall and no other choice than to hit out. Now he's hitting out as a matter of course. He's going out and trying to just dominate people, no matter who they are. And I love that.
I always thought it was possible with his game. I just thought he was too modest and fatalistic to embrace and accept that he could be more.
Yeah. But he would also keep on playing tournament after tournament after tournament, as we know, which is not the way you maximise your performances at the biggest tournaments. It's just not. We've seen that so many times, and things have changed. He is a different beast now.
And I'm going to sound an awful lot like Greg Rozetsky now, but I really do think it all hinges on the decision to part ways with Günter Bresnik and to employ Nicolas Massu, and that's... And I'm sure these are words that Dominic Thiem said at great length and with a lot more feeling at the time. That's not to dismiss, obviously, what Günter Bresnik has done for Dominic Thiem. He's made him into the guy he was, 8 months ago when they parted ways. But he made him into that, and he did what he could do, and he was potentially holding him back a bit. At that stage, we know his approach to tennis. It's, you know, harden your player, turn them into an iron man that can play week in, week out and cope with anything. Well, he'd done that. He was an iron man. It was becoming counterproductive at that point. And maybe seemed like a left field choice at the time, Nicolas Massu, but I assume at the time that the approach was made, my guess is the pitch was, I can turn you into more than this, Dominic. You need to broaden your horizons a bit and
feels like
believe.
He's focused on a few things. That you know how some players and some coaches will say, you need to strengthen your strength. You need to make that weapon of yours something that just can hurt anybody. Well, he's got a few of those. And he doesn't play sort of... grinding tennis now the way that maybe Bresnik got him playing. He feels like he plays almost superhero tennis, where
he didn't tonight, though. It was very unexplosive tonight, which I actually found really, really impressive. It disappointed me in terms of the match. It made it a slightly damp squib of a spectacle, but that was largely because of Zverev, and I think also he was very, very nervous Thiem. I think he was encumbered by tension. I don't think he was able to freewheel and hit out in the way that he was previously, and the fact that he dealt with that so well, and you know, Zverev was out there having a strop because everything wasn't going his way. It wasn't actually going Thiem's way hugely. It was a bitty performance. It was, you know, he obviously wasn't middling it and feeling it and feeling loose like he had been, but he thought, it's all right, I can still win, I'll just do it at 70%.
Well, he used base level, didn't he?
Yeah.
We've talked all this year about how he's developed a base level that can win him a lot of matches, and he still won it in straight sets. So, again, it's arguably just really good news for him. And
Nicolas Massu is back, incidentally.
He'd
gone to the Davis Cup.
With Matt.
Which, he's done the Davis Cup before it's even started. Nicolas Massu.
Matt's not back and we're a bit down about it.
I don't quite understand what Nicolas Massu's relationship with the Davis Cup is at this stage.
Instead, we've got Marcelo Rios in his jeans at the everybody's wearing a suit and he's wearing his jeans.
You know when you sometimes watch a film and there's like an actor in it that seems like they're in a different film? where when you watch your scenes, you're like, was the director saying something different to you? Were you handed a slightly different version of the script with different notes on it?
Have you turned up
at
the wrong...
That's what I thought when I saw that picture of Marcelo Rios.
Have you turned up at the wrong set?
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
If someone told you this is a comedy...
Why are you wearing that mask? Right. So Dominic Thiem now faces Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Yeah.
In the final. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
It's just, isn't it? It feels like the right outcome for the final. It's not the one any of us predicted. No one predicted that, right?
No.
No. Good.
No, I don't think so. Although I have got two in a row in 2 days right, haven't I? Because I said Tsitsipas would beat Federer last night. Just thought I'd get that in there.
Yep.
Okay, moving on. The way he won today, what was your takeaway from it? Were you disappointed with Federer? I mean, it was 6-3, 6-4, 6-4, 6-3. I can't remember which one. But where do you put the win?
I don't think it was bad from Federer. It wasn't like it was against Djokovic. He's just really outplayed. Really outplayed. I know he did make some errors on some big points, but the similarities with Melbourne were extraordinary, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, and this is the thing.
Really extraordinary.
When you say outplayed, what's interesting is statistically, it doesn't look like that because he had 12 break points. Tsitsipas only had 4. Tsitsipas converted 3 of those 4. Federer converted 1 of the 12. Which is, it really is quite jarring, really, isn't it?
I'm going to do a shoddy job of articulating this because I've had one beer and
Splendid.
It's nearly midnight. But that statistic is slightly misleading, isn't it? Because Tsitsipas only had 4 break points because he was doing such a good job of converting break points.
That's a good
had
point.
Had he not converted any of those 4, he might have ended up in lots of juices and had to do with what Federer was doing. Which was creating a break point, going back to juice, creating another break point, going back to juice, and not taking any of them. So it's not...
Not shoddy, Catherine. That was quite good. Well done. keep drinking.
I feel like my annoying brother probably could have expressed that in about 4 words.
No, I think I'm with where you were. the thing that struck me right from the off, and I remember thinking exactly the same thing at the Australian Open, and I'm sure I just didn't think it at the other two where Federer won in straight sets because they were over so quickly, but just the difference in physicality between the two. There was a moment where they had their photo taken at the net and Tsitsipas looked enormous.
Yeah.
He was a good head and a half taller.
I thought exactly the same.
He had Koh-Tanga shoulders.
He was several shades sort of more tanned. He made Federer look like a slightly anemic...
Yeah, Federer looked small.
Relative.
You know, to see Federer look like that is... You know, he usually dominates the court. He looked like, all the way through, and including in the rallies, it felt like Federer was reactive. He was having to be reactive to Tsitsipas, which is a really weird situation to be... And he was having to use his talent just to compete.
Mm. Like,
and what I mean by that is his timing with half volleys on the baseline... manipulating the ball just in order to keep the guy off him or at least try to... It felt like those films sometimes where the superheroes just met a bigger superhero and no matter what they do, can't really handle the other bloke's powers. And I thought Tsitsipas all the way through, I was expecting Tsitsipas to win.
Yeah.
Pretty much from the first
ball. There was never a moment where I was thinking, oh, Tsitsipas is waiting for the other shoe to drop here or, you know, if an opportunity did come along that he failed to take. I didn't worry that he was thinking, oh, that's my chance gone, I've blown it. I've, you know, the mental frailty that inevitably so often creeps in with these young guys, it's what sets them apart. You know, every time I watch Shapovalov, I am thinking, against one of the top guys, I'm waiting for the other, if he's in any kind of even footing type position, I'm thinking, when's the other shoe going to drop?
Yeah.
When's the spell going to break? When's he going to doubt himself?
Federer described Tsitsipas in his post-match press conference as hard as nails, tough as nails, I think it was. And I thought, what a compliment.
And yet, soft as goo. yeah. also.
I mean, so disarming.
Managed to get the spelling right on his bizarre cultural tribute on the camera today.
Which one was that?
Stranger Things, which I don't know if that was some sort of philosophical assessment of his experience or whether he was just saying, I really like the Netflix series Stranger Things and nothing more than that. But he spelt it right. And he looked really pleased with himself. And then he did the on-court interview with Annabelle Croft, which is lovely, and he said, I don't care who I play. Which, given the disparity in the head-to-heads against Zverev and team, I mean, he's owned Zverev and very much not owned team, I found bizarre, and yet I still believe him. I still believe he just didn't care and thought, well, I'll beat whoever it is.
You view it as a challenge, that's
yeah,
the thing.
Exactly. And then they did the ATP, the tournament did this tribute to players that have retired throughout the course of this year, which is a lovely thing to do. They tried to do it after the doubles, but the doubles match went very, very long. In fact, delayed the start of the singles quite considerably. So they rescheduled it for after the singles. And so they wheeled out all of these players that have retired this year, culminating in Thomas Burdick, who officially announced his retirement today. And Annabelle did an interview with Burdick. They played a montage on the big screen, all really lovely. And the director is obviously wanting to cut to sort of reaction shots of Tsitsipas, because that's really nice. He was sat there on the bench while it was all happening. Tsitsipas decided to remain topless throughout this ceremony. So there are a couple of sort of really quick cutaways to Tsitsipas before the World Feed director obviously realised, oh, no, he is indecent. Cut away from that immediately. It was just so Tsitsipas. Yeah. Just in his own little world, sat there semi-nude, watching the world go by.
he said about those break points that he didn't take, and the similarities you mentioned between this and the Australian Open was that he had 12 break points against him on that day, and he didn't get broken once. This time he got broken on the single occasion also with 12 break points. He was asked about what it's like facing those break points, whether it's stressful. He said, no, it's it's like a challenge. He said, I mean, obviously I would prefer not to have to save them, but he genuinely looked as though he meant that he just thinks, isn't this great? I mean, there's a stat that he's about 4 years old when Roger Federer reached...
4 years and 3 months when Federer played his first ATP Finals in 2002.
He was a four-year-old. I mean, extraordinary. And four and a half. And he just looks as though he can't quite believe his luck, that he's here, that he's getting to play in this arena. And
but he also feels like he belongs.
Yeah.
Which is the magical formula, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is so rare. And you either get starry-eyed, dreamer, can't believe my luck, can't believe I'm here, which is adorable and lovely and heartwarming and likeable, Matteo Berrettini. Or you get sort of Zverev style, yeah, this is my fucking house. I've already sworn on this podcast, I don't know why I just censored myself. But to have both in one weird and wonderful human being,
it's cool.
is really, really special.
It is. And one of the things that was really noticeable to me, because he's playing Federer, you inevitably end up watching what the crowd reaction is like to people. And we've talked about a lot because of what happened with Djokovic the other night. But he really grows on the crowd, doesn't he, Tsitsipas? There was huge support for Federer today, but I get the sense that people just find Tsitsipas lovable as well, and there was an affection for him, and you could imagine him winning people over.
Yeah, it was funny. During the match, obviously, it was overwhelming support for Federer. Polite, entirely respectful and polite towards Tsitsipas, but overwhelming insanity towards Roger Federer, cheer-led by John Berko, who I thought was having a coronary event during that game when Tsitsipas was trying to serve out the first set and Federer had all those break points. It was an immense game. It was glorious, but... Whew.
Is that the one where Tsitsipas outlasted Federer and took everything he got, finished it with a backhand, went down the line and started laughing at his own amazement?
Correct.
Amazing tennis.
Yes. Can't remember what I was going to say. I've been derailed by John Burko thoughts.
It was like when he hit that backhand, and it was after a really extended 20 shot rally, it was as though he'd sort of been playing Roger Federer on a computer game.
Yeah, it was.
And he'd taken him on and won, and he couldn't quite believe that this was real. And it was lovely. Yeah. It was just so lovely to see that on his face.
I was going to say about the crowds, wasn't I? I thought so. It was subdued but polite support, obviously with pockets of Greek Tsitsipas support around the place throughout the match. But then when he won and it was over for Federer, and Federer fans had there was no cause, suddenly there was just this outpouring.
Yeah.
From everyone in the stadium, I thought, even the Federer fans, possibly not Burko, he was probably just crying, but majority, I felt like they went, okay, well, Federer's out, there's no point in dwelling on that, I'm totally happy to to support this guy.
I was standing next to a family, looked like two teenagers, maybe about 18, son and daughter, parents, and the daughter was sat next to her mum, and every time Federer won a point, the mum went up, and every time Tsitsipas won a point, the daughter went up. It was hilarious, and they were so into it. But yeah, I think it's going to be another really interesting year. But just as a tennis player, Tsitsipas, I know he had a few rocky months this year, but he has everything. From what I can see, as an athlete, the way he moves, his athleticism, his sheer strength, reminds me of when, all those years ago, Per Bastolt, the ATP trainer, told me that Roger Federer's grip was stronger than every other player. When he was 19 years of age, they used to do these grip tests, and he had this twig-like arm. And yet, when they did a grip test, Federer had the strongest grip on the tour. And when I look at Tsitsipas, he's not bulging biceps like some of the players, he's not burly like Berrettini, but he looks
statuesque,
so strong. He looks like he just goes into the forest and starts felling trees.
He's perfectly balanced, isn't he? His physique is perfectly balanced. Yeah,
he's got dexterity.
I remember.
I thought
until the French Open this year, I don't think I saw him in the flesh at the Australian Open. I did see him in press conferences, actually, but I hadn't seen him really up close. I don't think I'd interviewed him. Oh, I did interview him at the Australian Open, didn't I? Anyway, I'll tell this now extremely watered down, compromised story anyway. I was in a lift with him at the French Open, because, as you know, I was staying in his hotel. Well, he was staying in my hotel. We were staying in the same hotel. And I was totally gobsmacked. I sort of remember having to sort of lean back. I did an awkward lean back and look. I had to crane my neck to see his face and assure myself that it was in fact Stefanos Tsitsipas. And I was thinking to myself, this is a 20-year-old boy that you're sharing a confined space with, and he was just looming like a sort of monster in a horror movie. It really, really struck me.
Big bloke.
How large he was. And I thought of that when I saw that the photo at the net he did with Federer today. I thought, well, Federer's having the same experience that I had in the lift at the Mercure this
Indeed.
May.
Right, and who's winning this final? It's a tough one, this, isn't it? I mean, you know, now
I think Tsitsipas is winning this final.
Hold up. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. I think it's going to be a classic.
Yeah, I think Tsitsipas in three sets. They met in the Beijing final, three sets. Tsitsipas won the first, team won in the end. Their previous meetings before that, none of them were this year, I don't think, so I kind of disregard those. Yeah, I think Tsitsipas.
I think so too. Same, three sets. I think,
and then
right.
Is he going to have a horrible year next year? Because no, that's what happens.
No, because he's got so much hunger, and he's just got this appetite for it all, and he loves it, and he's just got such a foundation to his game. I mean,
what if he like falls in love and gets his heart broken though?
This we
David
did discuss.
And I are worried about that scenario.
I think he is capable of falling in love more than anybody has ever fallen in love.
And that or at could, least thinking that's the
that
case.
Could make it, that could make things interesting. So, we'll
you guys, I've discovered this new emotion.
A watching brief for us from the sidelines. Just prepare yourself, folks, is all we're saying. This could be a possibility. Right.
Stefanos Tsitsipas under the influence of heartbreak. Can you imagine?
Incidentally, I went into Roger Federer's press conference afterwards, and he was so miffed and yet so professional. It was really interesting to watch him under the influence of just being really annoyed and irritated by everything that he hadn't done well, and some of the questions were irritating him, but he wasn't really reacting. He was just sort of almost closing his eyes and counting to 10 so that he could just get through the questions and be able to deliver his own answer.
Roger, what do you think the year holds for the next gen next year? He was actually asked that.
Yes.
And he took a deep breath and he said, I feel like I've answered this question before, and then delivered just the most quotable answer.
Yeah. It was great. But, you know, you saw the fires that burn within at the same time. Mm. It won't take him long, but oh dear, he just doesn't like it. What he didn't like is that he had chances to break. He thought he'd got it. He felt like he'd thrown them away. That's what he said. And at the same time, he was really not taking anything away from Tsitsipas. He was very fulsome in his praise, not only as I said, him being as tough as nails, but he said he's really aggressive and he does what I do. I was trying to stand on the baseline and be aggressive, but that's what he does, and he does it really well. Like, as better than anybody else. I think he's the closest thing to Federer in the game.
Do you think if you had said to Federer before the tournament, you can either beat Djokovic in brilliant style, in the way he did a couple of days ago, and not win it, reach the final, or you can reach the final, or you can win it and not get a win over Djokovic and avenge the Wimbledon final defeat, what would he have taken?
I think he would tell you that he would take the title.
Yes.
But deep down, he would take the win.
Agreed.
That's what I think.
And I think possibly, maybe even at the time, he wouldn't have realised how much he wanted the win.
Because he's been burying that. He's been burying that so that he can deal with it.
Yeah.
But you saw it. You saw it come out at that moment. Catherine mentioned Thomas Burdick and the on-court presentation today, which was lovely, actually, that they went out their way and they made this a thing. And Nicolas Almagro, Marcus Baghdatis, Thomas Burdick, Victor Estrella Burgos, David Ferrer, Marcin Matkowski, Max Murney, Radek Stepanek and Mikhail Yuzhny. When you see them all lined up like that, it's a lot of players, isn't it, that have just exited the sport this year and retired?
Almost all of them younger than Roger Federer.
Yeah. Is there any of them older?
I think Mikhovsky is.
Murney would probably be older.
Murney.
Maybe.
I mean, yeah, I think the doubles guy is older, but I think everybody else younger.
But I mean, yeah, I went into Burdick's press conference and just asked him, the first question was, when did you know? When did you know this is it? I can take no more. And then how did you feel? And he said it was during the US Open. I mean, he'd started the year quite well, but his body just stopped working. And he said, the main feeling was just relief. Because that I'd come to the decision finally, you know, that I'd accepted it. But he looked totally at peace with it all. He said, I've got no plans. I don't want any plans. I just want to take every day and just enjoy the fact that I don't have anything on and just, you know, work it out in the future. And I thought, how nice it... I mean, look, it's obviously nice. He's made a fantastic living from the sport, but he has put 15 years in. And I know he hasn't maybe done everything that some of the others have done, but he was really wholehearted and warm when he was discussing that 2010 Wimbledon. That was the highlight for him. Even though he didn't win it, the fact that he beat who he beat on the way there, which I think was Federer and Djokovic, and then got beaten by Nadal in the final, his eyes lit up just talking about that. He was clearly so proud about that.
There aren't many that have beaten them both in the same tournament. I think we ran a graphic on that today. Outside of, you know, fellow members of the big three, it's him, Nalbandian, Safin and Songa. I think there might be one other, but basically other than Nadal and Murray, it's an elite club.
Yeah. Doubles today, Pierre-Hugues Hébert and Nicolas Mahut, as predicted by Catherine, beat Lucas Kubot and Marcelo Melo 6-3, 7-6 into the final.
Yep. Yet to drop a set.
An amazing match that I saw quite a bit of between Ravan Klassen and Michael Venus, beating Cabal and Farah 6-7, 7-6, including in a 12-10 tiebreak, and then 10-6 in the third.
They were match point up, Cabal and Farah.
Oh.
And I think it will hurt a lot.
It's an amazing match. There were some fantastic exchanges.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. They should have won it, Cabal and Farah. They were tight. I mean, both teams were tight, but it was... Oh, God, that was tense.
It was tense.
It's amazing how tense the doubles guys get. Danny and Greg both say that you get tighter in doubles than you do in singles because you're responsible for someone else.
Yeah.
You've got someone to have to be accountable to.
I know, I can imagine that. So, Catherine, we have one more to go. One more podcast tomorrow. Got no Matt today.
Until the one on Monday.
Well, obviously. Obviously, we've got a whole another week of dailies from the Davis Cup Finals because Matt is there at the Davis Cup by Rackerton Finals and we will have dailies from there. We're going to have a chat with him tomorrow from Madrid to find out what it's all like out there. That's what I'm going to do. And then we'll have a chat after the ATP Finals final so that we can cover what
I'm
went
glad
on.
You made that sound weird as well. I've been making that sound weird all day. I haven't found a but
we
like
need some other lingo.
Well, if we were in finals. America, we could say championship match, but obviously we can't do that because we've got self-respect. So
ATP finals decider.
No, none of it works. I've been through all of this today.
Anybody got any ideas out there that isn't
climax?
Make... Oh dear, no, I don't think so.
Crescendo.
No, it's not happening.
No, none of it works.
If anybody's got one, you know, get in touch at Tennis Podcast. We're brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisboards.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y. We have just emptied the bar. I mean, do you remember when it was loud and James Brown was playing about 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
There are security guards by the door staring us out. They are not Tennis Podcast listeners.
No.
Not yet, anyway.
Well, I mean, they are inadvertently, not by choice.
Hey, maybe they'll be like the driver in New York who listens.
Oh, Rodney.
Rodney, who didn't want to listen, ended up listening, and now he's a listener. Hello, Rodney.
Hello, Rodney.
Hope you're doing well, Rodney. So maybe the security guard over there who hates me at the moment is going to like it in a few days' time. So, as we were saying, we will be back tomorrow with you all week long. We will have our Kickstarter beginning on the 2nd of December. If you'd like a reminder, you can scan down on your show notes right now and stick your name down, your email address, and we'll send you one reminder on the 2nd of December if you want to back the Kickstarter and the crowdfunding effort of the Tennis Podcast so that we can do more and more in 2020. If you're enjoying the show, that's really how we pay for it all, so that would be great. And is there anything else I've forgotten? I don't think so. Tennis Podcast Live on 2nd of December as well. If anybody wants to stick the name into the ballot, they can do that as well. That's in your show notes. And yeah, sign up to the newsletter and tell every human in the world about the Tennis Podcast.
Under threat of punishment from David Law.
Indeed. So, see you tomorrow.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.